Take your seats. We're so grateful you are here. Thank you for coming to another PEAK Forum. My name is Carrie Bostwick, and I will serve as the moderator for the forum. PEAK is tonight's sponsor, and it's the brainchild of Dan Droege, who's running around doing things behind the scene in front of all of you. PEAK stands for Public Education Advocates for Kids. So would the PEAK members wave your hands or stand? This is just a group of men and women who are united in one voice to raise awareness and focus attention on public education. If you haven't signed up for our newsletter, I encourage you to do so tonight. If you've been to one of our forums, you are familiar with the representatives at this table. I want you to know one thing. Regardless of who sits at this table, or this seat, you are in the important chairs. Not saying these are not important people, because they are, but you have the power to elect officials who understand the importance of public education. You have the power to hold people accountable on behalf of our children. You hold the future in your hands. Don't get confused and think that tonight's focus is on them. You are in the seats of power, and I don't want you to forget that. If you forget that, then this is relatively meaningless. You have the power to hold people accountable, and that's what we're going to focus on tonight. We're fortunate to have area superintendents of schools and some of their students with us from their district, so I'd like to take a moment and allow them to introduce themselves, and if you brought students with you, will you give us a brief introduction of your students? I don't know. Oh, Chuck has the microphone.
I'm holding the mic, so I'm Chuck McCauley, superintendent of Bartlesville Schools. My beautiful wife is in the middle back there. She teaches at Central. She always loves it when I introduce her. Yeah, cheer for her. And Stone Yang is a senior. He's the student body president at Bartlesville High School.
My name is Vince Vincent. I'm the superintendent at Dewey Schools. And we have with us Caleb Annell, who actually came on last minute notice. We had a student that was supposed to be here, and she had a family issue that came up unexpectedly. So thanks to Caleb for stepping in at last minute. So great job. We appreciate you coming.
Rick Peters, superintendent at Caney Valley. And we have representing us two students today. Alex Thomason was originally going to show up and then was not going to show up because he couldn't get off work. He tried diligently. So we pinch hit with Dakota Johnson. Dakota, wave at us here. Dakota's a junior. Alex is a senior. And then Alex got off work at the last second. They let him off to come here. So both of them will be asking questions, and we appreciate their attendance tonight.
Good evening. I'm Nicole Hinkle. I'm the superintendent at Bowring Public School, and we are a pre-K through 8th grade, a wonderful little school just northwest of here. And I just want to say thank you to you guys for your dedication to education.
I'm Chris Sander. I'm the superintendent of Nowata Public Schools. Unfortunately, my representative was not able to attend this evening, but I do have some members in the back over there.
Thank you. We're glad that you all are here, and we're very glad that you are here to help us ask questions. Tonight's forum, while a very familiar topic, it'll have a unique focus and a slightly different format than what you might be used to. We're focusing on this idea of top 10. This concept, articulated frequently by Governor Stitt, is a singular goal of his administration, to make Oklahoma a top 10 state. As anyone familiar with the current state of education in Oklahoma, we are not top 10. On some lists, we're near the bottom. On others, we slide way up to the middle. In fact, on some lists where we are number one, we don't want to be number one. We don't want to be top 10 on the list of incarcerated people. So the top 10 target is our big focus tonight. What will it take to get us to that target of top 10 in education? The way this format will work, our students have some questions posed by their districts or communities, and they will have the opportunity to ask those questions of the panel. Several questions were submitted to PEAK before the panel, and those questions have been distributed to the students as well. PEAK has articulated some questions. I have some questions that came in this evening after I printed the questions. We're going to try to get to all as many of them as we can, hopefully all of them. If you have a question in the audience or one comes to you while they're talking, please feel free to write it down and wave it in the air, and George will get it up here to the front so that we can ask your questions of our superintendents. In short, we want you to remember who's in the important seat. That you can respond, that's okay. You are. You should walk away from tonight ready to engage in discussions, ready to hold people accountable, ready to take serious action steps. Now, what you walk away from here tonight is largely dependent on the questions and the answers. So, superintendents, before we get to the actual question and answer format, will you take a moment and share with the audience one thing that you want them to take away from tonight's forum? So if you could give them one soundbite or one topic or one issue that you want them to understand better because they've been here tonight, what would that one thing be? And we're really hoping for 5 different responses. That's pressure, I know. Sorry, Mr. Peters. Yeah, I'm ready. Take it away.
Well, the mic is in front of me, so I'll begin. First off, I want people to know there's been I'm very appreciative of the revenue enhancements that were passed a couple of years ago that enabled the state of Oklahoma to improve teacher pay in the state. And that is beneficial. That's something that is a step in helping with the teacher shortage. But number one, the one thing I want to leave people with is we have not arrived. We need to continue to invest in education. We are, if you look at funding from a per pupil expenditure in terms of how much money our state spends on kids per pupil, and compare that to our region, so Kansas, Arkansas, Texas, we're still dead last in the region. And that type of funding is what we need to really help make a difference for our kids. And so that's what I hope that everyone will continue to advocate for, to invest in education for that per pupil funding. and to, so that we have the ability to get those resources to our staff and to our kids.
I think the one thing that I would like to leave with you tonight is when I first heard of Governor Stitt's goal to have us be a top 10 state in education, first question came to mind was, okay, what does that mean? And probably in our world, we have a tendency to kind of go directly when we hear about rankings, things like that, as to what are the measurements, what's being measured, and how's it being measured. And typically when on the national scale, a lot of those measurements that are used are some of the more identifiable and easily measurable indicators, largely standardized testing. And so it makes me concerned a little bit about what really are going to be our goals. And a lot of that conversation will happen in forums, I think, like this. It will happen in education circles. It'll happen at the legislative level as well, about what those goals actually are and how they're going to be measured. I think our state has started to make a big turn. We've started to move out of what I kind of consider the dark days of standardized testing, where we were so pressured and it was such an absolute driver of what we do in the classrooms and every aspect of our school institutions. And we started to move in a good, positive direction, where we are now recognizing that there are other indicators of quality education other than just what's measured on a standardized test. So I hope that we don't revert back in some ways to that thinking, and I hope we move even further forward to understand that things like school culture and school safety are very vital aspects that, if we can find ways to measure those also, I think, are things that all of us value and probably tend to lean to in some ways a lot more than what the what a standardized test may measure. So my hope tonight is that we have conversations that further help us progress towards finding a lot of more of a holistic approach to what a quality education means.
Kind of along with what Chuck said, In regards to infusing some more funding for operational dollars for schools, is certainly at the top of our list. But one thing to consider in this, and Superintendent Hoffmeister has done a great job with bringing it to the forefront. You know, she spoke in front of a congressional committee about 6-8 weeks ago about trauma with kids, and that Oklahoma leads the nation with kids that have had adverse childhood experiences, i.e. trauma, which brings a whole set of circumstances to the table that we weren't used to when we were in our younger day. So in order to meet the needs of our kiddos, we need to infuse social workers, counselors, mental health to help our kids. Because actually, when you think about it, you know, and everything affects everything, doesn't it? And if we are dealing with kids in every classroom, we don't know what happened to them last night or when they were last year, that have some adverse childhood experiences. The more you have, the more highly you are to be deeply affected. And by bringing counselors and social workers, we can help raise the academic, because these kids, first of all, they're trying to survive. Okay, they're trying to survive. They're trying to make it. So they may not be near as interested in reading, writing, and arithmetic. It lowers the ceiling for their academic achievement. And so in order to help raise the ceiling, we need to infuse it. We need to embed in our schools, not just counselors, not just school counselors, but mental health counselors, along with DHS social workers, to help our students so that we can meet their needs physically, emotionally, and that will help academically.
Just to add a little bit of what Mr. Peters was saying about trauma, there's lots of kids in our classrooms that have been through trauma. They say most kids go through two traumatic events in their school time. But our classrooms are so big a lot of times that there's not the opportunity for teachers to build relationships to know what's going on with each individual child. So reducing class sizes, I feel, is huge right now. So continuing to raise that per pupil funding so there's more money in our schools and resources that creates those resources that we need.
Like Mr. Vincent, I was very curious as to what Governor Stitt actually meant when he said that the top 10 in education, like, because there's really not a clear definition out there. There's a turnaround plan out there, but that has very specific things in it that I think are very achievable. But I think the largest thing that we can do, it's all going to come back to dollars and cents, but I think the access to training for the positive behavior intervention strategies, or maybe the State Department provides that to our schools at no cost, or maybe it's other ways we can infuse resources into the school systems without using tax dollars, maybe as beneficial as anything. I mean, just having the knowledge to be able to handle the kids that have the traumatic experiences would be a huge step in the right direction.
Thank you. So you all have heard five different perspectives, five different ideas about how you can walk away from here better informed. Some of these questions that have been submitted before focus directly on what they mentioned, and some of them focus on other related interconnected issues. What I'm going to do right now is turn it over to our students to ask questions of the panel. I will yield my microphone so that we can have two microphones over here. I know that excites some of you. But you will ask your questions. If you came with questions prepared, you may ask those first. You can ask and roll through the questions that have been provided for you. But this is your show now.
All right. First question. This question was submitted to Peek before the forum. It says, I'm glad to hear about STEM/STEAM, but I've been dismayed that much of the local emphasis seems to be on computers, example, learning to code, skill that I fear artificial intelligence will soon make obsolete. I'd like to hear instead about efforts used to produce citizens with at least a basic understanding of biology, health, nutrition, or ecology, chemistry, basic to reading labels, and physics, electricity, water systems, and climate change. What are your schools doing to address this issue?
So in terms of, we've had a lot of publicity out with our STEM program. Our computer science program has truly exploded. And I think that was one thing I wanted to mention previously regarding what can be done when you properly invest in education. I think our STEM program related to computer science, when you have quality teachers and you give them quality training, which that requires funding. In other words, these folks went to training in the summer when they're not on contract, which takes funding to send them there, to pay them to be there, to do that, to provide that opportunity for their kids. And then you have to have the technology in place and the facilities in place to provide that for the kids, to give them that opportunity. The question that was related to making sure the other science and health things are covered, that the course that I just described, our computer science program, they're actually elective courses. So we still have these are just academic electives that kids are choosing to take. So we still offer the full, you know, through chemistry and physics and the life sciences, those are all still part of the standard curriculum. I'm excited about the coding, because I do believe that is, whether you're going to college or not, that type of experience, having that type of knowledge is something that can benefit everyone. So that we haven't lost anything from that science curriculum, to answer that question.
And I will piggyback off that. I'm not sure that any two STEM programs are created equal amongst school districts. And so they're attacked in many different ways. But I would say another valuable aspect of a STEM program is just simply the creation, the opportunity to have critical thinking skills developed, problem-solving skills developed, because really it is really a project or problem-based, in some cases inquisitive-based program, and these are the kind of activities that these students are going through. So I think it really is multifaceted in the subjects that are infused in the STEM program. Also, though, for us, we also still have those other core subjects. And many times the STEM program will piggyback off of the concepts that are taught in many of those other courses as well. So it isn't necessarily a standalone course in many STEM programs. It really builds off of other primary core subjects. And so that's really the way ours is built. And so we are not eliminating the other science courses because we have a STEM program.
At our school, this summer, our school invested in our teachers. We brought in a company to train our teachers on how to develop project-based learning curriculum independently. So every one of our teachers had that training this summer right there at our school. Part of the result of that is I just looked this week and I noticed that as a result, unknown to me, the attendance rate is extremely better this year because we have more kids engaged and actively learning. They'll just pose a question and then our kids will go develop an answer in a group or they'll come up with some sort of project. Like we had, our football coach wanted a t-shirt launcher, but we didn't have one. So we had some kids take some 2x12s and a ratchet strap and a piece of guttering and a piece of bungee cord, and they made one in their physics class as part of just to answer that problem, just a posed question. So that's what we're doing is we're embracing the project-based learning not only in STEM, but also in our civics classes and our just across all the whole curriculum.
So recently, the ICAP program has been rolled out by Superintendent Hoffmeister to further career planning within the state. So what actions do you believe the school districts can take to further act upon these and propel the notion Governor Stitt has made for putting Oklahoma as a top 10 state career planning-wise?
Well, the earlier that we could start talking to students about careers, the better. It starts even in the elementary school. Canyon Valley was involved in the pilot project with ICAP last year, and now it's rolling out, you know, full steam ahead this year. And so our counselors are working with our students and will be developing plans, which are fluid. They'll change, but nevertheless, it's a start. And with our Gear Up grant, we had for about 7 years. We end the year with a senior assembly, and each student comes across the stage, or actually it's outdoors now. It's kind of a party, kind of a celebration, and it's spoken what their plans are after college, and that's kind of what the ICAP is. We were a little ahead of the game, I think, on that, but the ICAP's a good thing. It's a real good thing, and I appreciate Superintendent Hoffmeister leading the charge on that, and it's to benefit kids.
I think one other aspect of the ICAP that's probably not as well noticed is the simple fact of learning how to plan and goal set. That is a lifelong skill that we all utilize as we go through our lives, no matter what phase we are in. You know, one of the biggest things that we know about an unknown future, which, I mean, things change so quickly that honestly our students, they may prepare for a future, but it is certainly an unknown future. And what they are going to experience that we know they're going to experience is change, whether it's job change, whether it's change in their environment, whether it's having to learn new skills because their former job was removed because of technology, whatever the case might be, they're going to experience change. So the concept of being able to plan and understand what that process is like is invaluable. And I think that's part of what this ICAP does, is it starts that process at a much earlier stage than what generations before them have been accustomed to.
I think I really have anything new to add. I think it was 3 years ago, we actually added a new position, Leslie Sexton, who I don't know if she's here and her husband is, but she is a counselor for us, and we put her in the role because we felt like our counselors were already so busy to put something else on their plate would be too much, so that she was part of her charge to coordinate that effort, and so really to start younger with kids, thinking about their futures. And then also we have a pretty robust internship program that we are started, we're in our third year from, which has really given the opportunity for kids to get out in the field and see what the world of work is like. So it's a good thing. It's a step in the right direction, I think.
I'll just say I think that it's a good step in right direction, but we only go through eighth grade, so we just have our seventh and eighth graders we're kind of incorporating it with Passport to Financial Literacy. So they're doing some planning in those classes.
We also have a full-time counselor that is in charge of the ICAP program for us. Ours is a little bit similar to theirs. We are doing the junior achievement with our middle school kids, but we are just starting the internships in the high school. So those are going to be beginning in next semester. So I think anytime that you can start the conversation at an earlier age and identify those careers that may be interest to you and and have a plan of what it takes to get there, I think you're definitely ahead of the game.
This question was submitted to PEAK before the forum. I saw nothing in the governor's program about staff support for teachers. How important do you feel this is towards top 10?
I think it's vital that we train our teachers to be able to handle the situations that are arising in the schools that today, like Mr. Peters mentioned, the traumatic incidents earlier. That teachers that are trained to handle those things are better able to guide those students and find the resources that they need. And I think that's important for all students.
I want to mention we've invested this year, had some new positions, one of which I'm very excited about, our elementary, over at Ranch Heights Elementary. We actually have what we call an ALICE program, which is an alternative program for elementary kids. And the need for that has come from listening to staff, because unfortunately kids younger and younger are coming to us that need that academic and social and emotional, I need some social and emotional healing so that they can learn. And so we have a program over Ranch Heights Elementary. Lana Murphy's in there. She spends some time, wherever she is, she spends some time with them because some of her kids are in the program. But where that kids spend, up to 12 kids spend a half day at Ranch Heights and a half day at Boys and Girls Club. They'll have, in the program, they'll have four adults with 12 kids at a time. So there'll be a teacher, an assistant, and then a couple of professionals from Grand Lake Mental Health that are with them. And so as you can imagine, that's a very expensive program. We start talking about having four adults with 12 kids. I'm at that time, and then they spend the other half day at Boys and Girls Club and come back. But it's an investment. It's made a huge difference. It's made an improvement at our other elementary schools because these kids are spread out throughout the district, so try to consolidate them where they can get some additional support. That type of resource in terms of support for staff is something that can, that's an example of what we can use that per pupil funding for. You know, this year we have made class sizes are something we can all agree on is important. We need to further improve our elementary class sizes specifically. We made a step this year with our upper elementary, but our younger kids, our lower elementary, they need to improve those numbers. You know, this year we ended up where if we had some numbers that were above where we wanted them target-wise, we hired an additional assistant to be with our elementary classrooms. We have five additional teacher assistants working in those roles kind of spread out throughout the district. And so those type of things are invaluable. It's not best. What's best is to have a high-quality teacher in there that's properly trained and has the time to work with the kids. So it's making sure that I think the teacher pay issue in terms of the teacher shortage, that's one, and we're heading the right direction. I really appreciate that. But in terms of having that funding, to have the resources to do all the type of programs that we're talking about so that we can make sure and invest in our teachers, invest in our staff so that they can invest in our kids.
This question was submitted to PEAK before the forum. The governor mentions teacher training for trauma. However, I didn't see new funding for special programs. It would seem additional funding needs to be appropriated for these types of programs.
I just described one that we're doing that we haven't been able to find anything like it anywhere. But that's an example of with additional funding that can be used to get in the classroom. That was something that we knew was a need, something kind of on the other end of the spectrum. We added a position for a secondary teacher. We have lots of technology that's available for our staff and for our kids. So we have a teacher under Granger Metter that has Zach Michael, who his job full time is to work with other teachers, other secondary teachers. He doesn't have a class load so that he can focus on them. Next year, I want to be able to do the same thing for our elementary teachers because they need that type of support so that they can have the time to use all the tools that they have. So that's an example. If there's more funding available to us, we'll have the opportunity to do those type of programs.
Well, a couple areas where we were able to, I consider, advance because of additional funding. We, for a long period of time, we only offered one fine arts at our elementary school, and we're pre-K through 5 at our elementary, and that was music. We couldn't find a music teacher 2 years ago, so we did have an art teacher, so we were able to add art, but we lost music. With the additional funding now, we have the opportunity now to have music and art for our pre-K through 5th grade, which is, again, it's invaluable for those students. And it's a great addition to what we were able to do for elementary kids. With our infusion of technology in our district over the last 4 years, we want our technology to be more than just a computer that they type on. Obviously, that's what everybody wants it to be, an instructional tool. But in order to utilize it effectively, it requires a lot of training. It requires a lot of support, as we all know. The advances in technology and what you can do with it, it moves very quickly. So training is invaluable. And so the extra funding also allowed us to have 2 technology instructional coaches, which part of their position is to help advance our teachers in understanding what things that they can do with their technology and then help develop strategies that they can utilize that actually creates an opportunity for our technology to create authentic learning experiences in each of the classrooms. So again, that was a valuable piece that allows our technology now to start being utilized as it should be. And we've got a lot of growth to make, but we're a lot further along than we would have been had we not had these kinds of opportunities.
In regards to professional development for staff, that's just unequivocally important. Without PD for our staff and supporting our staff, it's kind of like being on an island by yourself. And so with additional funding, we were at Caney Valley, we were able to do, to hire, last year we began with, and she's here tonight, Twyla's here, one of our instructional coaches. You know, we're a one-on-one device school, basically from third grade up. And we really felt, and we did a whole year of PD before we gave the devices to the students. We tried to do it right, and Twyla was a great, great part of that success. We also hired a reading coach in the elementary school with the extra funding. We gave raises to our support staff. Our board gave back-to-back years raises for them, and also. To have security on our staff, to have security at both campuses, which is costly. It's not cheap. It's not cheap at all. And we took a hit, you know, financially, but it was something that we needed to do the last 2 years in order to make our campuses as safe as we can be, knowing that they'll never be 100% safe. But nevertheless, it's another layer of protection that we were able to do with the funding. And we appreciate that from our legislators. There's still a lot more work to do. As Chuck and my colleagues dialogued a moment ago, you know, we're 48th in the nation in per pupil expenditures. Per pupil, okay? But we spend about $8,075 per student. The national average is $11,454. So there's quite a gap. There's quite a gap there. But we're on the right road. We're on the right road, and we're very appreciative of that.
I'm just thinking, is some of the money that you guys are talking about Title IV money, some of that sick, well-rounded? Okay, because some of that money, it's additional funding, and we've used it for security around the school, and also art teacher, being able to add some art teachers, some of the extra things that they're for well-rounded kids, some of that extra money, and the security. That's about all I can think of that we've been able to use that extra money for.
This question was submitted to Peak before the forum. Many of our school systems that have large numbers of free and reduced families seem to have a larger number of students that have a large degree of trauma. To your knowledge, is there any state program or planned programs that can specifically help these families of these students?
I know trauma is a big buzzword right now going on, and the State Department is providing lots of really good free professional development for teachers. We've reached out to them, and they'll come out to your school and do trauma training. And then also RTI, that's a big thing going around the state right now. And again, I think having smaller classrooms where teachers have relationships with kids, so they know what's going on with kids. They know the kids personally. They know when something's going on. So they can help them to get the resources that they need.
I just wanted to mention, from a state budget perspective, mental health obviously is something that impacts us. Any type of reductions or changes to the community, this community, the parents, they have kids, and those kids come to our schools. And so any type of investment that maybe not be a direct impact on to those services, but it makes a difference in our schools. And for example, like Grand Lake Mental Health, without their partnerships and having those folks in our schools every day working with kids, because traditionally, you hear lots of talk about counselors. Our counselors are traditionally trained for academic support, academic advisement, career advisement, to get them kind of guided in a certain direction. But the reality is, many of our kids in our schools, they need that additional counseling. They need additional of that mental health and that mental support, and as hopefully that our state will continue to invest in those ancillary services, those wraparound services, because that's really where we need to continue to invest in our kids.
Yeah, I'll add to that. It's a great point, and Ms. Hinkle also made a great point. Relationships is what it's all about, and many times these students won't necessarily come tell you what they're experiencing, but it's the relationships that are developed between staff and students that then leads to that trust and the acknowledgement, and in some ways just the simple knowledge that someone is going through something. And then we can get that student to the proper people so that we can get to some of those wraparound services that Mr. McCauley was speaking of. And so there are community partners out there that do work with schools and assist us and give us opportunities for our guidance counselors to contact. And there's many of those statewide, just not locally, that we can get students and families in touch with once we know the need is there. And so both of those things are vitally important, I think, in trying to create an opportunity for students who experience these adverse events in their life to hopefully, to some degree, reduce those barriers to their education.
One of the things that I recently heard is that the Department of Human Services is trying to bring back a program with collaborating with schools to leverage funding to bring social workers back into the schoolhouse. That was a program that we've had in the past. Many schools could utilize some federal money if, in fact, they had additional federal money. But my understanding is they're going to try to get that program back going and helping schools to leverage costs, which would help us tremendously and help our students, and that's what it's all about.
I think one program that used to exist here in Oklahoma that might be a huge benefit at this point was a program called Parents as Teachers, and they trained the parents how to help their children learn at a higher capacity and how to understand the different things that they were going on at their school. But I have an innovative administrator at my school that believes in a one trusted adult, and he has a list and he knows that every student in his building, he knows that that person's one trusted adult, and he knows he can go to that one adult and find out information to help those students who may be struggling in specific areas with mental health or just different life circumstances.
This question was submitted to Peak before the forum. Recent data reveal Oklahoma is far from the top 10 in education. According to Oklahoma Watch, we are currently 42nd in 4th and 8th grade reading, 39th in 4th grade math, and 40th in 8th grade math, according to the latest NAEP report, which was released October 30th by the U.S. Department of Education. What actions can the school districts take to counteract these low rankings?
I think, in my opinion, if we're going to advance our academic achievement, again, back to my opening, with whatever measurement that is there, I think it does start with our intentional focus on supporting and making teaching a priority in this state and doing everything we can to make that an essential aspect of all of our focus and our energies. That's where the greatest gains come, is in a quality teacher workforce. Now, as far as practical things in the classroom, I believe the more we can move in our classrooms with our instructional strategies to strategies that create opportunities for our kids to problem solve and to multitask, that's really, to me, the movement that we need to make in our classrooms instructionally. That's difficult. That hasn't always been the strategy that's been utilized through the years. Many of our teachers, myself included, we weren't necessarily trained in that capacity. And so, again, we talk about staff training and professional development. This is what's vital about those things, because we have a workforce in some capacity that has to change, and they have to adjust to the needs that are out there. And we are now, when we talk about standardized testing, many of the standardized tests today are really multitask assessments and questions. Our students are being asked to analyze, to interpret, predict, and these are things that we typically are not used to teaching. We still sometimes operate in the mode of delivering information, and now it's more about utilizing the information that we have at our hands. And so that's a real big shift, in my opinion, and we have to make those instructional strategy changes in the classroom in order to reflect better as we move along with some of the data that's out there. So it isn't necessarily about becoming better test takers. It's just a matter of fully understanding what now is being asked of our kids who are taking these assessments, and then matching our instructional strategies to provide them the opportunity to have better success. And that doesn't happen overnight. But I believe it is happening in many schools, and all you got to do is look on social media and see the things that are going on in the classrooms around Oklahoma. And a lot of it is these multitask, hands-on activities, and that's where true learning starts to happen. And so processing is such an important facet to our students nowadays. It's not so much about the gathering information, it's what you do with it.
I think it's important to meet students where they're at, to try to move them in the, I'm a big fan of the growth model. Not every student that walks through the door has the same set of circumstances or the same background knowledge. So they're all going to learn at a different rate, and they're also going to have different interpretations of some of the same material presented to them. I think that for us to move that that needle. We have to understand our human capital, which is, we have to understand the teachers that we have in our building, and we also have to understand their strengths and weaknesses and provide support to them in order to make them more effective, more efficient teachers in the classroom.
Yeah, I just want to mention also, I think it's important, different schools, communities have different resources, and to use those, you know, to align those resources to best meet the needs of our kids. I think things like, we have some local, some private funds that have helped us to pay teachers to work additional for kids that need the most help in terms of where they can stay after school to get that extra tutoring, that extra help. Also, any those programs in the summer to get the kids involved where there is that gap, where they can get some that additional academic support by high-quality teachers. And those all things, those things do take funding, whether they use your federal funds for that or you have private foundations that help raise funding for that. Those things are beneficial. Because I agree exactly with Mr. Tanner from NOWADA. Obviously, that's the goal. You take the kids where they are. And then and the kids that come to you further behind, it takes them, obviously, it takes them longer to catch up and making sure that we are getting the resources directly to those kids.
This question was submitted to PEAK before the forum. The number of emergency certified teachers in classrooms continues to climb, according to Oklahoma Watch, with a record-setting 3,038 emergency certificates approved last year. What does this mean for our pursuit of this idea of top 10?
Well, it means that we need to continue to fill the gap with quality certified teachers for our kiddos, because that basically... That's one of the biggest holes that we have. We've made a little progress, but we've basically even this year we've almost hit the number of emergency certified teachers all of last year. Just June through October of this year, we're only 39 short of all of last year. So there is certainly a need, and there certainly needs to be a conscious effort to recruit teachers into our state, because like what's already been said here, a quality teacher with a group of kids, there's no substitute for that. And it's very possible, and I hate to mention this, but it is a possibility to a probability. It's very possible that in one more year we will have many teachers leave the field based on they've stayed they stayed partially because of what the state legislators have accomplished with the pay raise. And there's going to be, in my opinion, an exodus of teachers a little higher percent than we normally would see in a given year, which will create another problem and another void. But we need to get teachers in the teachers prep program, and there's just no substitute for a great teacher.
I've got to admit that I have a daughter that's a freshman at college, and all of her life she's heard, you can do anything you want, but don't be a teacher. And guess what she's going to be? She's going to be a teacher. And so I finally decided that I'm going to support her for that. But I wish there was money or ways to get kids, good students, to go into education, scholarships, making the classrooms, smaller classrooms where it's not so dreadful, more resources when the teachers have struggling kids, that they have the resources that they need to know how to help those kids, or counselors that they can go to. So the teachers can just teach and not have to solve all these other problems. So we talked about this last year. I wish there was more scholarship money to get kids to want to go into the teacher field.
We will hire your daughter. We'll make that happen. I'm serious. So I also wanted to mention that in terms of teacher contracts, our teachers, most of the time, you'll have your instructional days. We have kids, most districts have around 175 days, and then there are 5 or 6 days where teachers will have professional development, and which, 5 days throughout the year, typically there's 2 and 3 at the beginning of the year, maybe 1 at the end, 1 or 2 in the middle. I would love to have longer teacher contracts. For example, Texas, Kansas, Arkansas teachers are actually paid, their contract is a week to 2 weeks longer than what our teachers are. And not that they have kids that much longer, it's just they have that many more days for professional development. Because right now with our days, I mean, it's really, it's a scramble to get ready for the kids to come. I mean, it's really hard to focus on true professional development. So if we had additional resources that we could put, I talked about the STEM program, the training that we've gone to where we've actually been able to invest, where we could pay teachers at their daily rate to go to this training, which is what you should do with all professionals. But we'd like to be able to do that across the board, because I think the reality of the teacher shortage is going to take us years to get out of it. I mean, the last data I saw was, teacher ed, people going into teacher ed was down around 20% in the last few years. So it's going to take time. So the reality is we need to do our part in terms of training our teachers to prepare them the best we can. And part of that's going to be we need to have that high quality professional development where, you know, because the days of where teachers have come to us, they've done student teaching for a semester, which is wonderful. And they come in, they're better prepared than folks that haven't. And so therefore, if we can get some more professional development to them before the kids get there, over that summertime, it'll be nothing but be a good investment. And that's the type of investment that I hope that we can make as we move forward.
I want to add one quick thing. You know, the attitude of our whole state is changing. And part of that is because of the efforts of PEAK and the Bartlesville Board and Mr. McCulley and everything that happened a couple years ago at the walkout. And I say that because in the dark ages, okay, in the dark, we all know what I'm talking about without mentioning any names, the former state superintendent. You know, I was at a COSA meeting, guys, and there were 100 superintendents there, 100. But before we were going to go over to the Capitol to talk to our legislators, and one of the attorneys just asked, he said, hey, how many of you in this room, someone significant in your life, whether it be another teacher, someone significant encouraged you, a parent, to go into education? 99% of the hands went up, including mine. And then they said, then the next question was, how many of you would encourage one of your children to go into education? And not one hand went up. And that's the hole we're still trying to fill because of what happened in the past. But the attitude is great now. The attitude's great, and I believe that it's going to take some time, like Mr. McCulley indicated, but we're going to get there. We're going to get there in time, and that's a big positive to what's happening in Oklahoma City and with the efforts by PEAK.
I know that we have several teachers who are emergency certified at our school, and I think because of the training that we provided for them this summer and teaching them how to do the project-based learning, those teachers, they walked into the classroom and they're very effective. But again, that kind of training takes a lot of money. And it was a huge effort, and it was a strain on our district. But I think those are the kinds of supports that those people need. They need a lot of professional development, and you can't get it done in a week or 10 days. It needs to be continual support throughout the year, and that requires, you know, even more days and more funding.
And I'll just add, I think there's no doubt that emergency certified teachers, that there is an effect on us being top 10 in whatever measurement you want to utilize. But I think, and I'll even go back further now, we have to have more conversations about what it will take to make the teaching profession desirable. And it obviously, yes, the most obvious thing is just more pay, but those aren't the only things that goes into what makes someone desire to have a career. And so I think we really have to have more conversations about what those things are, even the private sector, you know, what is it that appeals to young people? And so, and I think, you know, high schools around this state are transforming in how they do business and how they do school. And I really think that's a place where it can start, and that we do kind of change that conversation even amongst ourselves in our schools and what our kids see is happening in their high schools and the kind of education that they are getting. And hopefully that spurs on some innovation, and the feeling of knowing that they can make a difference and be a part of something that is transformational. And I think those are the kind of things that may appeal to younger generation as well, in knowing that they are going to make a difference, and they certainly can help transform the educational system, because I think in some ways they're seeing that now, especially in high schools, in the way that we go about our business compared to 10 years ago at the high school level.
I'm going to deviate just a little bit from what we have, because another question was submitted that directly relates to the topic we were just talking about. Someone submitted a question before to PEAK, and it's a long explanation of something another state does to attract teachers, a state very close to us, very south of us. And this state has a program, according to this question, where you have to teach for a certain number of years in the state and pay your student loans back. And if you don't miss a payment on your student loans, then the state pays for the rest of your student loans. And so this question is, would something like this work in Oklahoma, and what are the barriers you see? So when we were talking about how can we attract people to the field, this was a suggestion that another state is already doing. So would something like this work, or is there something else you can think of, a creative option to attract people to the field to be called to teach?
Well, there are some programs. Obviously, student debt is a huge issue. And so I can imagine when young adults enter college, that's part of what's on their mind, is that I've got to get a job that's going to pay me enough to pay my student debt back. And honestly, teaching maybe doesn't fit into that category. And so that's a very real aspect, I'm sure, in terms of career choice. And there are some programs out there that offer payback of loans or loan forgiveness, going in particular schools, teaching in particular areas, in particular subjects. But I certainly would welcome that kind of conversation, because I do think it is a barrier to career choice for our young people. And so any conversation that we could have that involves, again, making it a desirable profession is one that we need to have. Now, whether those kinds of things can work, I'm not sure that I have control of those kinds of things. There's other financial institutions that are involved in that, certainly. But I certainly think those kind of programs are worth looking at, and maybe even some degree mimicking if we can do so.
I actually think that may be a federal program.
It was a long question. Uh-huh. Maybe it is. Well, that might be the teacher loan forgiveness,
right,
which pays back up to
$17,535. I think if we'll continue to invest in education, I think it's salaries piece of it, but in terms of teachers having the resources, I always use the example, and my wife will love this too. My beautiful wife graduated from college in 1994 as a secondary math education major and could not find a job. And we weren't getting more salary, weren't any higher at that time than they were comparatively than they are now. But so just to know, so in terms of what the teacher shortage, the difference is now, it's just going to take us time to make it where it's, once again, a field that folks want to get back into. I think the public perception has changed now towards public education, which is a step in the right direction. And my only fear about some sort of a state program, that money's coming from somewhere. And so my fear would be if that's going to somehow hurt some of the other services that we're talking about, too. But obviously, we'd be open to anything that would help us get more people into the field.
So this is a personal question, and it was not submitted before the PEAK Forum. So it's kind of related to what we've been talking about. I would like to know how school funding is allocated specifically, and is that allocation public record, and if so, where can I find it at?
You can find almost all of it on the State Department website.
Well, that's a complicated question. Let me get the chalkboard out and do some math here. It's allocated primarily off student enrollment.
And so there are many other factors that go into what's considered the funding formula. And of course, because of those factors, some schools get more state allocated money than others. And so in terms of is it public knowledge? Yes. Where do you find that? There's probably multiple sources of that, but certainly on the state education website, if you can navigate that thing, first of all, you'll get a master's degree, if not a PhD. And second of all, you'll be able to find that information. But it's the funding for schools is very complicated. It's unfortunate that it's that way, but I do feel like it's an equitable and fair formula that we have currently in the state of Oklahoma, and I do believe it's one that is noticed as that nationally. And so, but yeah, there's a lot of factors that go into it, but you're primarily based on your allocations on your student enrollment.
The state formula is a very, very equitable formula. If there was a lot of thought that went into it, it's not perfect, but it's very equitable, the general fund formula. And let me say, just as an FYI, it's very complicated. You know, Vince talked about student enrollment, and that kind of drives the money we get. But we really don't, schools don't control many aspects of funding. There's really only approximately, and you guys help me if I miss one, but I think there's only about four areas that we can actually control somewhat. And those would be to be sure that we count and ask parents to give us all of the free and reduced lunch forms, because that's a part that we can control somewhat by, can't control, you know, the everything, but by getting and working the form, by working and getting the forms back. Okay, that's one. The other is to distinguish the English language learners, the gifted kids, and to be sure that the special ed students get their counts in before October 1, so we can, you know, get some funding in the midterm and not have to wait a whole year. Other than that, I meant bilingual, Nikki. Yeah, thank you. And so really, we don't really control a lot of our own destiny in regards to that, other than these areas, and of course there's weights to kids and those things that make it a little complicated.
So extracurriculars can be a really critical component within the personal development of a student. What ways are the school districts acting upon to foster the extracurriculars?
Thanks, Owen. So I think it's important. I think the arts, I think there's electives are very important for kids. And that's something that can be tricky when you start talking about test scores and ACT scores, whatever measure you want to use. And oftentimes when you see budget cuts, many times the first things that are cut are, for example, the arts or some type of extracurricular programs. And I think it's important. I think those are important because I think the better relationship, all kids need to have a relationship with an adult at the school. And if they do, that's the best chance of them staying there with you. And many times those elective teachers and whatever that may be, they're spending more time with kids than anybody. And so they truly are invested. So I do think it's important that we continue to offer those experiences. And I do think those, I'm glad to see, I know some of my friends up here at the table are talking about adding some arts programs. I think that's very important for kids to get that background. I think we need to continue in those. You know, I mentioned to this group before the reduction in, for example, foreign language offerings in the state of Oklahoma. That's something that, to me, those are not things we need to be reducing. We need to be expanding those. If anything, I'd love to be able to offer, I'm hoping that we can offer foreign language at the elementary level at some point to kids. I think that's something that's going to help them. So I do think it's important, and I do think that but different schools and different communities have different things that are important to them, and they have to make those tough decisions. I do think it's important.
I'll just say quickly, the electives are extremely important. I think it offers a diverse curriculum, which is highly important for students at young ages to explore, and I think it gives that opportunity. Many times, we also have to understand the electives and the extracurriculars that's what brings some students to school to begin with, because it fits an interest and it gets them where we need them to be so that they will stay engaged in other aspects of school that maybe aren't quite as engaging to them. Also, certain arts programs, other extracurriculars or electives, they also work different aspects of the brain, which are very important too in the development of a young person. And so I think there's many benefits to electives and extracurriculars that really enhance and support the overall mission of a school district.
Just real briefly, it's all about connecting. Kids connect with adults, and they also connect with through extracurricular with adults. And kids that are successful, kids that stay in school, have connected somewhere. Okay, kids that drop out typically don't connect.
I have a theory that's kind of counter to most people's beliefs, but because coaches do spend a lot more time with their student athletes, they become very adept at building those relationships. And those teachers who have the ability to develop those relationships, typically, in my observation, have been your better teachers. So I know coaches sometimes take a bad rap, but in my opinion, they have the biggest impact because they do have the ability to create those relationships and build those relationships.
I'll just say, I've always said that coaches and those extracurricular people are the ones that kids go to school for, because the coaches give them the high fives, or they always get those data kids from those kind of people. So extracurricular, I think everybody believes that all those extracurricular are very important in our schools.
So another personal question for me. I've seen a lot of emphasis on STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math, in the past few years that have been in high school. But do you think there should be more emphasis on core classes as opposed to extracurriculars or STEM?
That's an interesting question. Kelly, you're asking the tough questions tonight. Who invited you here? I'm just kidding.
You.
I did. What's wrong with me? I always feel like there's just an innate emphasis on core classes. And so I don't know. Do we miss on not emphasizing that in some fashion, some way? I mean, possibly so, because I think we just kind of take it for granted that that is the emphasis. And as Mr. McCauley was referring to, unfortunately, when we see downturns in funding, we obviously can't lose the cores. Those things are mandated and required. And so maybe to some degree we do take those for granted, and maybe we don't foster enough attention on some of those core subjects. But as I contemplate the question, I don't know that we value necessarily the electives over the cores. But I would hope, as a school system, we're equally entertaining the value of both towards the overall mission of what we're trying to achieve. And so I would hope that we're not really choosing one over the other, if that's kind of where you're going with that.
I'm not sure that one is devalued over the other. I think maybe at this particular moment in time, we are more apt to celebrate a STEAM or a STEM program and publicize that and get it out in front of the public, because maybe it's new and, you know, it's shiny and everybody is excited about it.
Well, and I also think that's where jobs are. I think as the world changes, we need to prepare our kids best. And so I do think it's a new thing to schools. Therefore, I think that's why there's probably more publicity on that. And what we found, something that when you look at the research, you know, there's now more, it's more girls graduating than boys from college. However, there's fewer in the STEM fields. That's not the case. Girls are underrepresented. And so I think the public education, this is where the playing field is leveled. And so this is where the opportunity, when you have some comprehensive programs to expose kids to it at a younger age, it's going to help them be successful in the future. So.
All right, we have a few questions that were submitted tonight, and one that came from a Nowata Public Schools student. And her question is, online schools, it's about online schools, is the state's money being well spent, and are those schools being held accountable at the same level as public schools?
I think there's a need for, I think there's a niche for virtual schools. I think that it fits a very small percentage of the student population. I'm not sure if I can quantify whether or not we're getting our money's worth. My argument, I think, to that would be if they have that much money to spend on political campaigns that maybe we're not getting our money's worth. But that's just one person, one opinion.
I'll just mention, I think that online education, that opportunity, I don't think it's going away. I think it's here. I think it's at the, you know, if you've had a kid in college any time recently, they're going to be taking some sort of blended courses. So I think we need to prepare kids for that. I think that most schools now, they offer some type of option for kids and really haven't had to think about marketing that. But the reality is now that we do, because you can see those when you open the, well, radio or TV or whatever, you see the, you see these online schools being marketed. They do have, the kids are required to test, and so they do have, you know, their graduation rates and those type of things are listed, but I couldn't get into. I do know that in terms of their cost, I do know what it costs us to run a school, if you think about that, from your transportation department to people answering the phone to cleaning the schools, the technology that goes along with that, there's expenses that go along with that. So therefore, I do question whether or not they should be funded at the same level as a traditional brick-and-mortar school.
And I would agree with that. I think to reference the point about are they worth the money or are we getting our money's worth, I do think there is a place for online or virtual opportunities within the public school system. And I honestly think if you want to talk about the best bang for your dollar in that arena, the best bang for your dollar is for public schools to initiate programs that offer online training, or I should say online learning, whether it be a full virtual option or whether it be some sort of blended framework of some sorts within the school system itself. But I think schools are starting to do that more and more. They see it as an option for some students. And I think we, as a public school system, are set up much better to be able to provide that and provide the supports that are necessary for that type of learning as well. And so I think the greater bang for the buck is with an online program that's within a public school setting.
Certainly not a one-shoe-fits-all scenario here, but I do think, and I heard Mr. McCauley say this, that schools going forward, we're going to need to market our online schools. We're going to need to market it, I believe, because, for instance, we've lost a few kids to online school. By the time our principal finds out, they're already enrolled. Okay, and the principal, we can do that. Well, it's too late. We're already enrolled in X. You can fill in the blank. And so, going forward, I believe that not only Caney Valley, but many schools, most schools, perhaps all schools, will need to market it and make it public, because it's there and it's not going away.
We do some online blended, like our eighth graders that take Algebra 1, it's an online course, and they do that, and they find out that it's hard. They usually score about 10 points lower than they do if they have a classroom teacher, and we do that. So in a small school, we can give them the support that they need, and then hopefully when they go to college, they don't always opt for those online classes. We want them to get out and be social and get in a classroom and have a teacher in front of them. So our experience is it's been hard, and the kids say, I don't want to do that. I want to take a traditional class.
Yeah, and you'll hear, I think, more in the next coming months about opportunities. Cause that's an advantage that we do have in terms of kids can take some sort of a blended schedule, and they can still be a Bruin. You know, they can still be in the band. They can still be in the choir. They can still be in fine arts class or STEM class if they need. For whatever reason, they need to take some classes online. They do have that flexibility. But the reality is we need to make sure that we are staffed appropriately so kids can get the help that they need, because it is hard. It is hard to get that additional help.
Okay, we have about 7 minutes to ask some questions that were submitted from the crowd tonight. It seems that our educational institutions have been very quick to embrace all aspects of technology in the classroom. What research has been done to ensure that this technology enhances and is beneficial to education? What evaluations do you conduct to ensure that technology is effective, essential, and meaningful to education?
I think that let's think about this for a minute. How many folks in this room 20 years ago didn't have a cell phone? And think about what you could do on a cell phone then compared to what you can do now. Think about folks are going to apply for a job. It's hard to find a job where you're applying, you're doing pencil and paper, you're applying online. And so I think that, I mentioned this about the STEM fields, I think it's important that we prepare kids for that next step. It's not the answer. The most important person is the teacher. I mean, the technology is just a, it's just a resource. And so the reality is for our kids to be prepared, they need to have access to that. I think that what I'm most pleased about on the technology side is that I really feel like it gives our kids a level playing field. Many of our kids don't have the resources that they don't all have the same resources. And so by doing some systematic implementation in terms of like a one-to-one, it does give kids the resources away from school. Also, those kids that need that additional help, because we have lots of wonderful folks that help do some additional tutoring, the programs that are available to help tutors to come in and help kids be successful, that's available through technology, they wouldn't have that resource as well. So I think it's something that, I do agree, that it's not something that's a fix-all, put a kid in front of the computer and say, go, that's not something that is best, but it's definitely something we do need to use to prepare kids for the next step, or whatever that might be.
I think the other aspect of it is it's an expansive resource, and yes, if used correctly, it affords the opportunity for not only unlimited research options, but it also allows students the opportunity to produce things. And you think about the many different jobs and occupations that now have some sort of technology component to what they do. These are the kind of things that we want to, at least to some degree, give an opportunity to our kids to explore while they're in the public school setting with us at a young age. But, more than anything, as we start to talk about our students becoming problem solvers and really being multitask oriented, the technological opportunities that they have at their hands allows them not just to be consumers of knowledge, they can now turn that into being producers of information and knowledge as well. And so I think that's an important piece of it that you don't typically have without it in most cases.
By using technology in the classroom and talking with our technology director, instructor, coach, and our teachers, the same things come back to when I ask them, how do the kids like it? And the answer I get almost exclusively is the kids love it. Okay, they would much rather, so that's the survey. The kids are our surveys. So it's informal, but the kids. And it's not an end-all, catch-all, but it's a tool, okay? We're competing with a lot of different medias out there, and so by allowing them to use technology in the classroom, they would much rather do that than get a pencil and paper out and do their work that way.
Yeah, definitely student engagement goes way up, but also teaching those kids the appropriate use of the internet. You know, there's so many bad things out there, and being in a classroom, we have the opportunity to try to teach them what's appropriate and safeguards.
I think there's research out there to indicate that a capable teacher that has those kind of technologies in their classroom can present 90% more information than they could have when a traditional paper or pencil or book setting. That being said, I think that that goes back to training and teachers being effective and knowing how to use the technology. And you know, maybe they don't know how to use a Google exit ticket, or maybe they don't know how to do some of the things that would really simplify and enhance their classrooms. But one of the coolest technologies out there that I think is great that affords our students an opportunity that they may not ever be able to do is the VR goggles. And we have a set of those at our school, and like those, you know, we are able to do some pretty incredible things, like look inside of a lung, or maybe they can visit Mount Rushmore and they just are there. It's pretty impressive.
All right, I'm going to ask these next three questions. I have a question about the allocation of funds. I have a question about the dyslexia legislation, and then one more question about technology. Who would like the question about the allocation of funds? Excellent. We heard that there is not a lot of flexibility with how schools can use allocated funds. Would it help the districts to have total autonomy on how to use these funds? You volunteered for this question.
Would you repeat that question?
Of course. We heard that there is not a lot of flexibility with how schools can use allocated funds. Would it help all the districts to have total autonomy on how to use these funds?
Well, you know, most of the school's funding goes for staff and personnel, you know, 85 to 90 plus percent. So there's not a lot of discretionary money that schools can utilize for accessory items. But certainly the mandates that we have, every school's different. It's not a one, like I said earlier, it's not a one size fits all. And so to have flexibility with our schools and not having mandates tied to money really helps local control and gives that back to the autonomy back to schools. No two schools are alike. Out of the five of us here and the five schools we represent, there's many similarities, but there's also many differences. And so tying funding to mandates, the less mandates, the better for local control.
I agree. I just wanted to add to that. I would love to have the opportunity to have control over those funds. For example, I don't want to wait for something to happen legislatively for us to have to do something to work with our kids who have trauma. I'm not going to wait to figure out. I mean, we're going to do that. That's our job. And so I understand from the state's end, there's things that they need to do to try to be equitable across the state. But I would definitely like to have as much flexibility as possible.
Thank you. This question is about the dyslexia legislation. How will your district address how to mandate to educate all teachers about dyslexia? This is in reference to House Bill 1228. What resources will you provide to better help teachers serve students with dyslexia? Whoever wants that question can take it.
I'm not familiar with the bill that you're talking about for dyslexia, but I know that they cannot be placed in special ed because of dyslexia falls under a reading, learning disability. There's lots of professional development right now. The reading sufficiency office at the state is doing a lots of training, very knowledgeable people in that office on dyslexia. There's dyslexia handbook out there. I just came from the conference where they are wanting to get out to the classrooms and do training for teachers. So it seems like 20 years ago, dyslexia, they talked about that a lot, haven't heard much about it, and now it's really coming back. So I know that there's lots of training coming for dyslexia, it sounds like.
I think more than anything, in terms of how do you attack the training part of that, I think it's like you do with most of the things, because first of all, it's about awareness and what the experience is for a student who has dyslexia. So you start there. But I think it's important that when you start planning for how the training is going to occur, you start working with professionals who can help provide that kind of awareness, and then some of the specialized strategies that might support a student who has dyslexia. So I think you start there. In trying to bring in partners, if you need to provide that kind of training, that's how we would attack it.
And our final question from the audience is about technology, and you've addressed this a little bit, but the question is a little more direct. It says, "School technology sometimes comes from local industry. Have you thought about how to tap into this resource? How would you galvanize your community resources regarding technology?"
I'll give it a whirl. I don't know if it's exactly what you mean by community resources, but you know, many schools now, when we do bond issues, we have technology involved or embedded in a bond issue, because technology is very expensive, particularly when you're one-on-one. But even if you're not one-on-one, all the other technology aspects of technology cost more money than we would like to admit and that we really have in our budget. So the partners that many of us may have and that we have is our patrons that have supported bond issues to support technology on an ongoing, reoccurring basis.
In our STEM program, our elementary STEM program, our public school foundation, that's how we implement it. They raised over $300,000 the last 3 years with lots of private and partners to help us make that happen.
All right, thank you. I would like to recognize our elected officials who are in the room. Would you please stand? We have Senator Julie Daniels, Representative Daryl Fincher, Representative Judge Strom. I would like for you to make your way to the front, please. All good teachers, of which I am one, use closure, which is a technique to make sure that everybody in the audience, everybody in your classroom, understood what you were trying to do. So what we're going to do tonight is give each of you, very graciously, about a minute to ask you, what will you do to help ensure that Oklahoma is top 10 in education this legislative term?
Should we let the senator go first?
Oh.
Thank you for this. Normally, we do have her go first, but I've got my microphone. So what are we going to do that makes us top 10 in education? My goal is to focus on what we look like in the future. We have a lot of people working on how we fix this right now, get you all the resources that you need. But in 2030, think about right now. We've heard about the bill that actually, I'm drawing a blank on the bill number, the one from 1989, 30 years old, that we use for 1017. Sorry about that. I've been working on others today. It's 30 years old. When our kids now, in 14 years, when the pre-K graduate, what will schools look like? Think about what that looks like. How are we going to prepare for them? I'm very concerned about the report cards that we have for the schools, because I'm concerned that it keeps us, our schools, from actually getting better. Because in 2030, we're going to have some great schools for 2016. And so my goal is, how do we move this forward? How do we make this effective for all?
Sorry. You've got your own. Sorry.
Thanks, Representative. Thank you for having us here tonight. Gentlemen, our lady, I really enjoyed hearing you. I know I haven't met a couple of you before, but really appreciate it. I took lots of notes. I did chuckle at the question about how to understand school funding and which website do you go to read that. And would you please tell me, because I'd like the simple, straightforward way to see that as well. Took lots of notes tonight. I heard a lot about teacher training. I'm wondering how the new Oklahoma EDGE program is going to be continue to be rolled out and how it may tie to any future funding, what sort of benchmarks and outcomes SDE has put on you, or how much flexibility they're giving you. Is there a certain piece of it you're going to try to do each year and then master something before moving on to the next? I need to know more about that strategic plan. But I did hear a lot about training and the best use of technology and still continuing to make that critical investment in our teachers. So I'm glad that there were a variety of questions and I got to take notes, so I'll be knowing what to focus on.
I think the most important thing we've done, a lot of us in the interim, is just this right here, sit here and listen and see what we can do in the future. I'm interested as the year goes on and what we can do. You talked about the difference between our counselors, and everyone talks about our need for greater counseling in the schools as trauma, especially in Oklahoma, goes up. What can we do from the Department of Human Services to bring in real trauma counselors and mental health professionals so that you can put your school counselors back to the business of career training and path training and stuff as we work on ICAP and we go to the future. As well, things that have been pretty interesting to me as we watch, and I know a lot of schools have had trouble with, you know, nutrition. We have kids that come to school hungry, their nutrition. What can we do from the Department of human services to bring in resources to do with that, so that, again, it doesn't weigh down on your budget. What can we do to help the schools? But we need to know, we need more situations like this. We have the opportunity to listen. What do you need and what can we do that? Because I go in all the time and I bounce things off Miss Hinkle. I still have a hard time not calling you Nikki at the start. I go and I bounce things off and she goes, wait, no, 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 don't. Let's, and we'll sit and talk about things. And then I leave thinking, dang, I really thought I had a fix here. But I intend to really, and I hope we all will, and more people in the House, we don't fall into the trap that we did. It's not really a trap, but after 1017, where we became numb to the situation for so long, we listen to what you need as the needs of education grow and change, your needs grow and change, and what you're going to need in the future. And like Mr. Fincher says, what can we do right now to help those kids in the future?
Thank you. All right, thank you to our elected officials. And I am beyond grateful to our district leaders and the amazing student representatives for their help tonight. I'm also really grateful that you made this forum a priority, but here's the hard part. Remember that important seat, the one that you're in? Now you have to do something. You have to hold your elected officials accountable to what they said here tonight. You have to support your schools. You have to show up when they need you. You have to do your part. It doesn't do any good for the students of Oklahoma if you come to a forum like this and leave the same. So my challenge to you is to get out of that seat and do something. Thank you.